Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming. I know it's quite early to talk about money. But while crowdfunding is an important matter, over the last few years, some money was injected in the film industry in a way that was not anticipated. And this injection of money had results on the industry today. It started for the geeks, for very small, but obviously, and we will see it over the panel, some big movies were also funded, and they got a lot of benefits from crowdfunding. Of course, we're in Cannes with that Le Marché du Film. My name is Domenico Laporta. I'm editor of CineEuropa.org, so my main job is promoting European cinema. So you might think, what am I doing here? I have also a company dealing with campaigns, crowdfunding campaigns. We are helping directors to achieve this, to really reach their goal and have their form of art be funded by private backers. So I will quickly introduce you to our speakers today. Those are like the major players, not only in Europe, but also in the world. So we'll start with Dan Schubrun.
That was pretty good.
Okay, Dan is from Kickstarter. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what
you do there. So if you're not familiar with Kickstarter, we're a creative funding platform, crowdfunding platform. We've been around since 2010. We are a platform specifically for creative projects like film. Film is one of 15 categories on the site, so it's everything from music to video games to design and technology projects that are getting created. The basic principle is, you know, and I'm sure most of you guys know this, you set out to create something, some work of art, and you rally an audience to get you there. I've been with Kickstarter for about a year. Before that, I worked at the IFP in Brooklyn, which is a film nonprofit. You know, and we at Kickstarter really see ourselves as advocates for artists and for filmmakers. A lot of us are filmmakers and creators ourselves. And what I do there is, along with two colleagues, head up the film department, which is a very diverse job. It is a lot of this, a lot of traveling the world, talking to filmmakers about their projects. And when there are exciting projects at any level that are coming to the platform, we are working very closely with them to make sure they have a good experience, to make sure they run great campaigns, and to make sure that, you know, we are doing our job of getting creative, amazing new works funded. Over the years, we've funded 1.6 billion from 8 million different people. So we are the largest online community. Of that 8 million people who have backed a project on Kickstarter, 60% have backed more than one. And we really view this as this vibrant community of backers and creators who are getting new things made.
Thank you. The next speaker is Colin Brown from Slated.
hi, everyone. Slated is a little different, I think, from what you might think of as a crowdfunding platform. It was modeled when it began. It was modeled on a concept that was around in the tech world in Silicon Valley, which was a way to, which, and anyone familiar with that knows, has heard of a platform called AngelList, which was a way to sort of get angel money, a phrase that itself came from Broadway, angel money into startups. And Slater was created by someone from that world and thought this would, who then moved into film and thought, wow, wouldn't it be great if we could apply the same model? His name is Steph Patner, who's the CEO. And his idea was, you know, well, why can't we make film financing as easy as investing in the stock market? Interesting idea. It's evolved, and in fact, people ask me what Slated is, and they're not familiar with it, I actually use Cannes as the analogy, because financing is certainly one part of it, and it's not donation-based or pledge-based, like a lot of brilliant crowdfunding platforms are, I think, and a lot of projects that arrive on us, in fact, use Kickstarter, Indiegogo, among others, already. We're trying to raise investment money. So, you know, the money that comes through it is really in return, in with an expectation of a return, not a you know, through patronage or you know. But that's just one part of it, because actually, like a marketplace like here, it's all about, you know, facilitating connections and introductions and networking. And so what really happened, it's just can expanded around the world year round, and trying to make that process a little less serendipitous. So it's we're trying to bring efficiency, if that's the right word. It always connotes different things, but making it faster, the things that people already do so successfully in the film world anyway. And in the process, maybe opening up the doors to a different tier of investor who might have found this world a little too complicated. So.
Thank you. So our next speaker is Mark Hofstadter, head of film at Indiegogo. Can you tell us a little bit about your work and your company?
Sure. So I'm the head of film at Indiegogo. We launched as a platform in 2008 at Sundance, solely in film, then expanded out to technology and cost-based projects. We're the oldest crowdfunding platform. We're also the world's largest global platform. When we launched in 2008, we were available in every country around the world. So far, we've seen projects run and funded from 224 countries and territories around the world. You know, similar to other platforms, it is a rewards-based platform. Filmmakers, producers can come to Indiegogo not only to raise funds, but also raise awareness and market their films. People who look at crowdfunding solely as a means for funding are selling themselves short, because there's so much more that they can offer. My career started at October Films, Bingham Ray's company that was based in New York. After that, I worked at William Morris and then worked for the studios, Fox and Universal. Came to Indiegogo about 2 years ago. There are five members of our team, Los Angeles, New York, Toronto, and London. And also we have been working not just with the filmmakers, but also creators. As an online platform, we are seeing many valuable and talented individuals coming from the online communities, YouTube and so forth. And so that makes up a large part of our demographic as well.
Thank you. So our next two speakers are from France. Mathieu Maire Duposé, Managing Director at Ulule. Can you tell us a little bit about the platform?
Yes, Ulule is a worldwide platform too. We are in seven languages now. It's 700,000 users in Europe for the moment. We have office in Barcelona, in Montreal, and in Paris. Movies is the main category on Ulule, and we are here since 2010.
Thank you. And last but not least, sorry, I should have had women speak first. You're really a minority. I mean, look at that. This is like reflecting the whole film industry. Sophie Cuneau, Director of Partnerships at TuscoProd. And TuscoProd is also in French and in English.
Yes, absolutely. Well, TuscoProd was launched in 2009. It's the first crowdfunding platform specialized in audiovisual arts and movies. And, well, we welcome every kind of formats on the platform, might it be feature films, documentaries, web documentaries, short films, everything. And actually, when we started, we had a mixed combination for the models. We were equity-based, we had an equity-based model and also a reward-based model. So we tried that for 2 years, and we changed directions when we realized that, the idea of doing equity was based on the idea of that a movie is going to make money in theaters, and that was not the wrong that was not the good hypothesis to start an equity-based crowdfunding model. So we actually 1 upon 10 movies in France is making money. So we shifted directions and we became a reward-based crowdfunding platform. So that's it. So at the beginning, we were just taking a few movies, like we would take 10 movies and accompany them the whole campaign. And now we changed models, and we just have this reward-based crowdfunding model. And we work on we've been welcoming more than 450 movies on the platform. So this is figures are a little less than the other platforms, but we also have a strong suit that is coaching and
yeah, we'll talk about
okay.
that.
Okay.
Yes. Right. Thank you. So this is how we're going to do this. I will jump in with some questions, but the floor is really open. The idea is really to address the questions of the people that are practicing crowdfunding. So if you have already managed a campaign or you are planning to do it, please don't hesitate. You raise your hand. I think there will be a microphone. Yes, but let me first start with a few questions. I know you're very impatient, and then we will get back to you. Okay. So first, so that people can really differentiate the different platforms here. Kickstarter obviously has more than films. Tusco Prod is only movies, so those are both extremities that are very different. But what's happening in between? I mean, Slated is also about movies only.
Yes, it's only movies for now, but television is going to be the next step.
Okay. How about Indiegogo? What is the percentage?
Percentage of film versus other categories.
And when I'm saying film, I'm more focused on feature films. Maybe not shorts, even though a lot of shorts are using crowdfunding platforms.
So in the 7 years of the company, we've seen approximately 40,000 projects, film and video, that have been funded through the platform. Regarding feature length, they make up the wide majority of those films. Documentaries.
When you say they have been funded, it means that they reach their goal?
They received. So we have two methods of funding. We have fixed, which is an all or nothing proposition. We also have flexible, which is keep what you raise, and our filmmakers find that most usable in the post-production process, where every dollar counts. For example, we had I'll give you a perfect example, a couple of documentaries that used a flexible funding model, didn't reach their goal, and still achieved. There was a documentary last year, it made a number of top 10 lists in America, called Elaine Stritch, Shoot Me. It raised only about 30% of its goal. Film made it, still made it to theaters. We had a film that was at Toronto this past year called Cub out of Belgium. Again, raise only a portion of its film, but film.
I did that campaign. You didn't know that.
Oh. So those 40,000, they have received some form of funding. As I said, most of them are feature length, more skewing towards documentary, because they're lower budget, obviously, and they're more niche, so they're easier to fund.
Thank you, Mathieu.
Most of the projects on Ulule are short movies for now. We have a few stories with features movies, but it's more difficult for features movies, specifically in France, because the whole managing system of cinema and funding in cinema is very difficult. Producers are not really looking for crowd. They are more looking for other producers and for help from the state, etc. So there's just a few stories on Ulule. The workload on Ulule is a features movie. It's €700,000, but it's a very specific project.
So when a producer wants to make a film, pre-production is very important. I mean, you spend a lot of time on this, and somehow you can have the feeling that if you go through to a crowdfunding platform, you can go a little bit too fast and just put the project out there and not be prepared enough. What are you guys doing in terms of preparation, not only of the producers but the whole project? Because sometimes it's about hiring someone to deal with this. It's not the producer's job. It's a new form of profession to deal with crowdfunding.
It really is. And the most important thing to know when you're embarking on a crowdfunding campaign is to have a strategy and have a plan and to spend a good amount of time prepping. For
what is a good amount?
We usually recommend 3 to 4 weeks. On if you're really doing a blockbuster campaign, it could be more than that. If it's going to be, I've worked on plenty of campaigns that were on Kickstarter. It's not so much about usually raising the entire budget of your entire film, because obviously that can be a very difficult thing to do. It's more about figuring out when this is most effective. To Mark's point, both as an audience building and marketing opportunity as much as it is about a financing opportunity, figuring out when you both have the need to raise a certain amount of money for some stage of the film and a want to kind of announce and introduce this project and begin sharing it with audiences. So, you know, if you're trying to raise $100,000 for production, that could be very different than if you're trying to raise $15,000 to buy your ticket to a film festival and fly your cast out. On those small campaigns, we've definitely seen them come together very quickly. The process of planning the campaign and actually building the page is fairly straightforward, and I'm sure you guys are aware of it. You make a great video, you come up with rewards, and you know it's very easy to right that you're going to do something, probably the thing that you need to focus on a little bit is whether or not you can actually fulfill all of the rewards that you're putting on there. But where the real work comes in our eyes is in the outreach, is making sure that your campaign isn't a tree falling in the woods, making sure that any and everyone who is going to care about this and should care about this is coming to the page. So that's really probably what we focus and coach most on, and where a lot of the energy goes into is coming up with a strategy that, you know, is more than just a Kickstarter-specific outreach strategy, but is really a strategy of how you're getting this out into the world.
Are you scouting for projects? I mean, sometimes you see in markets something like that, like a project that you go to and say you should come on.
Absolutely. You know, I think that Kickstarter specifically had the good fortune of kind of blowing up. You know, it was 2013 and Veronica Mars and Spike Lee and all of these amazing filmmakers were coming to the platform. Spike Lee literally wrote in to our online customer service line and was like, "Hey guys, anyone there? I'm Spike Lee. I'd love to do a project." So we did have this good fortune of it kind of doing, you know, a lot of the work done for us in terms of finding great artists. That's still the case. Actually, Abel Ferrara just launched a Kickstarter, and that was another. He wrote into the customer service line, was like, "Hey guys, love to do a project." I'm like, "Wow." But as we grow, we are trying to be very proactive about finding great projects and making sure that the type of filmmaker, again, whether they're doing a $10,000 campaign and we just believe in their craft and their art, or these more banner filmmakers are coming to the platform, we are trying to kind of be out there and be present in every community that could bring a great project to us and hopefully be ambassadors that they can reach out to and know that they can talk to us when it's time to launch.
Thanks. Is anyone here having a whole different approach? I mean, I know there's some coaching. I mean, you're doing a lot of coaching. You're doing a lot of coaching too. Well, what is it about?
We are coaching every creator project on Ulul.
So it means that you cannot launch the project without the coaching process?
Yes, definitely. We are looking at every project on the platform before launching to help the creator project to succeed his project. So we are going to help him to understand how it works, what kind of money he can raise, what kind of rewards he can create, how he can communicate on his project. And we are going to coach him before we launch his campaign and during all the process of the campaign after. So we have a success rate which is 67%, which was on the highest on the platform in the world. Because creators project needs help to understand how it works.
So we talked about success rate, we talked about stars, I mean Spike Lee, Zach Braff, people like that coming to your platform. I mean, obviously it was attractive for a lot of people. But we haven't talked about, it is success in terms of reaching the money, but then they have to deal with the rewards and they have to deal with the criticism and a lot of fans that are angry. I mean, Zach Braff had almost 50,000 people really getting at him after the movie was financed, and he had a hard time. He even said that he will never do this again. So it's not quite a success story for him.
Yeah, you know, Zach Braff is definitely, it's probably the name I hear most in meetings, and definitely a divisive figure, I think.
Spike Lee also talked about that.
Yeah, Spike Lee, well, what was great about the Spike Lee campaign was I think by the end of it, he went so far out of his way, I think, to try to address criticism, and that campaign was amazing to me in that you could write him a message and he would write you back. He was really plugged into the matrix on that one. And, you know, knowing, being from the New York film community and knowing Spike Lee, I don't know that there's anybody out there who's given as much of himself to filmmakers as Spike Lee. I think the big criticism that we all see when there are these kind of, like, banner projects launching from very known names, you know, as I'm sure a lot of you guys might think, oh, aren't these guys taking money and attention away from filmmakers who really need it? With Spike Lee specifically, he had this great quote that he said midway through the campaign, which was, "Look, even I, you know, I've been making films for 20 years. If I tried to make Malcolm X today, they would have put him in a superhero costume." At all levels, the way that the traditional film industry is set up is not necessarily set up to support the type of art that great artists want to make.
But how do you? Yes, you wanted to say something. Sorry.
Well, I want to follow up on that because from our point of view, let's say he did want to make Malcolm X, it'd probably be a little impractical on Kickstarter, right? I mean, I don't know what the budget is. I don't know what the budget of Malcolm X would be now, but that's kind of the problem we're trying to solve, which is how would a film that wouldn't get made, you know, how could it utilize fan-based, you know, how could it tap into Spike's fan base? Kickstarter, Indiegogo, great examples of that. And then the next role is, well, we've now got to persuade the marketplace to understand that the risk on that project. And that's when you said, we try and do things differently. That's our role as well. We're educating the buying end. We're going to have to give them new metrics for evaluating risk, and make something like the Malcolm X now possible.
But there are risks for the producers, but there are mostly risks for the people backing those projects. I mean, if you put your money out there and then you reach the goal and then the project all of a sudden is not made, what's happening? Is there some kind of insurance?
Right. Well, and to address that, two things on that. So one, we always work with our filmmakers to manage their campaign, set their goals at realistic elements. And also in terms of the preparation, as much as possible. Dan's right, at least 4 weeks, for the big ones even more. But as you were sort of saying, if you're doing a campaign and you fail in a large way, then outside equity may say, well, I'm not, this is not a project for us. But the reverse is even better, though, when you really do succeed and you ignite an audience and ignite a community. The success behind it is amazing. There was a film that premiered at Sundance that was funded on Indiegogo called Dear White People. Dear White People raised, in the grand scheme of budgets, $40,000 to hire a casting director, get the ball moving on pre-production. But the campaign was such a success. The video that the director Justin Simeon created for it went viral, had over 1 million views as the campaign was closing. And at that point, it caught the attention of a private equity investor who put down the full budget. And that film, again, as I said, premiered at Sundance, and it sold out worldwide through the sales company. And at this point, it's now the highest grossing film that has been released via a crowdfunding platform.
I do want to echo your concerns and say that to us, like, this is a very key issue, is responsibility of the creator to both create the work and fulfill the rewards that they've promised. And this is a requirement on Kickstarter. You agree to terms of service that say that you will either do both of those things or refund the money that you've received. This is really where our all or nothing goal comes from. Mark was talking a bit about flexible versus fixed funding. We are an all or nothing platform, meaning you set a goal, you say this goal is to do this thing, and that is really what you're rallying people around. It's not necessarily give what you can and, we'll take whatever we can get and do X with that money. Maybe it's we need to finish post-production. We need to get through production. And it's safe. It's a safety net for both the filmmaker and for the audience to know that that thing will happen.
Most of all, though, I mean, as we live in a very social community now, living online, one's reputation, of course, as a filmmaker, as a producer, is very valuable. If you do wrong by people, they will not let you do wrong by them ever again. They will hound you online. They will tweet at you. They will Facebook you. They will email you. And some of them will probably even find your phone number online too. And so it's when you interact with those individuals. A lot of animation campaigns, they obviously take a longer lead time to complete the projects. Animation, obviously. And last year, we had a project called Simon's Cat out of the UK. It's the highest funded project out of the UK, raised £310,000. And they are actually creating short-form content while they're creating this TV pilot, which is what they funded. And it's been a year, but it's also hand-drawn animation. And I know in speaking with the producers, they said, like, after 5 days of the campaign being completed, people were asking, where's my DVD? And so it's like, as long as you use the updates, you use the tools that we give you and provide with you, and you utilize your social media, you can convey to the crowd, here's where we are in the process. And that's really what the updates tab is for, to let people know where you are and what you're doing. And same thing if you were using traditional equity and you didn't tell your investors where you were with the post-production schedule, they'd be like,
So we can take maybe two or three questions. There was a arm raised in the back. I don't know. Oh, you need a microphone. Okay. Yes.
Yes, hello. Mark Burschuller from Bad Model Movies. A question to Colin. Is your company company-driven or is it project-driven, what you do?
Is it about what do you mean by how do you think of both of those terms?
Is it about investing in a company
or in a project? It's project driven.
Okay.
It might get into slate projects, which you know is a quasi company anyway. Right? So if you think about it, it's project driven.
So we can also create a slate, and we can. There's a possibility of investment into the slate and pre-production, or then into the whole slate of production.
There are many people there who've have several projects at once, and for now they're doing them separately, campaigns.
Yeah.
But that you can imagine where we might be headed on that, because you know from as we're reflecting of the marketplace, and the marketplace tells you that because. When I mentioned earlier, we have to re-educate the marketplace in some way. Well, the risk is part of that. I mean, instead of running away from that, we actually have to be part of the whole re-education of what that risk is and how to deal with it. And a slate approach is one way of dealing with that. So.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else?
Yes, there.
Then I'll get to you.
Hi. Question for Colin.
Can you please tell who you are, what you do, and why you are interested in this?
My name is Sailesh. I'm a producer from India. And my question is for Colin, which is, who assumes the legal responsibilities, given that you're an investment platform and not a crowdfunding platform? And number two, is there an expectation that the investors have in terms of the kind of returns that they will get from a project?
On the legal side... We're just an introduction platform. So, if we're a dating agency, we're not going on the dates. So the legal responsibility, or seeing whether it ends up in marriage or divorce. So the legal responsibility is very much on the both the investor side and the producer side. And the way we don't look at their contracts or anything in fact, we rely on the information coming back at us to understand what happened. Interesting enough, I don't, are you from India, do you say?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, one of our success stories is an Indian language, wasn't Hindi, it's another language, film being financed, shot in, Sunrise, getting money from an Indian producer who was based in New York. And completely unexpected, and it shows how the marketplace works, that in fact, that discussion found its way. You know, it's one of the beauties of all of what we do is that somehow it overrides nationality and so on. So, and your second question was?
The second part was about what is the kind of return that your investors expect from a feature film project?
It varies, and that's another part of it, which is, all investors have to, and producers have to have a conversation with their investors, what does success look like to you? And some are doing it purely for investment purposes, and they should be realistic. And some are doing it for patronage and because of passion. And success means different things. And it's not just a return. It's really.
But it's not reward based. I mean, you're not offering rewards. So it's funny that we had two questions. The first two questions were about your platform, which is more reassuring for the regular producers. I mean, it's halfway between the regular crowdfunding. This is actually not crowdfunding, what you are doing, because it's not the crowd. Those are not the people that would actually go and watch your films.
We'd like to get a crowd of new type of investors. We think that there aren't enough people investing in film. So our crowd is new investors who put small amounts of money. It's kind of sits somewhere between, crowdfunding, as we know it, and the marketplace itself. So that's where we sit in the equation.
Thanks. Yes, here.
Hi there. My name is Johnny Bunning. I work for Raven Banner Entertainment as their community manager and doing marketing. So we have a Kickstarter running during the market, which is called Sky Sharks. My questions are really for Kickstarter and Indiegogo, just advising filmmakers and teams on how crowdfunding can really come into the marketplace. So, for example, we've done deals on the film already, and Sky Sharks are sold to Germany. as I'm part of that team, I'm very nervous of releasing that information to the public. It's like when you hear Sony, does that alienate people from wanting to donate money? And I've also seen an Indiegogo that took an advert out on the back page of one of the trades as well. I'm just curious if you knew about that and what their approach was with their campaign, spending the money on that advert, and if it's going to be effective for them at a marketplace.
Well, I just want to shout out and say that the Skysharks is a great campaign. It launched as part of our German launch, which happened last week. We are now online and available in Germany for creators to launch projects, and this was one of the projects that we launched with, and these guys have been working with one of my colleagues on it, and it's going really fantastic, and I'd encourage everyone to check this campaign out. I do get this question a lot about how to kind of position this and how to position other kinds of traction that are happening in tandem with a campaign and how to kind of leverage the success that you're having on Kickstarter towards further success. I wouldn't be afraid of sharing information with your backers about what's happening with the project. People are getting involved in this because they want to see you succeed and because they want to see this film. It's all about creating a very inclusive kind of curtain opening view into the life of this project. I think to share the news that you're selling territories and that this film, partially probably thanks to the traction that you've got via crowdfunding, is now going to have a lot of success out in the world is something that the vast majority of your audience is going to be quite excited about. The one thing that I'm very interested in that you touched on a bit is how much kind of like market and trade sources and press hits can kind of translate into success on campaigns. It's really varying, I'd say. I think the opposite is probably more easy to have come true, is that success on Kickstarter that somebody who you're meeting with Googles and sees is a good thing. And certainly at my previous job, when I would see campaigns that had raised $40,000, $50,000 on Kickstarter, I would kind of say, wow, this must be real. There's an audience waiting for this. The opposite being, does an article in Variety, does an article in Hollywood Reporter or an ad translate to success on a crowdfunding platform? My instinct is probably not. I myself have run a Kickstarter campaign. We got a lot of great press from the kind of like film industry. It certainly lends credibility and it certainly lends a prestige to the project. But because our industry is so inundated with these things, I haven't seen it in a lot of cases translate to money coming in. Where money would come in is if you can kind of get press that is very intrinsically tied to your project. So if you're making a documentary about fencing or about a magician, the magician community doesn't see crowdfunding every day. And to them, that might be much more exciting than an article in the trades that we're kind of seeing on a daily basis.
Maybe, Sophie, is it something that you would recommend? Because you're in charge of partnerships to projects. Do you recommend that they should do some regular advertisement as well? Because that costs money. I mean, it's money you take out of the campaign.
That's not what we are advising. And actually, regarding what is Facebook ads or ads in general, yes, we have to address the community. And if it doesn't target the community in the right way, you won't have any money coming in. So that's not what I would advise, actually. I would advise more to go to the press and have articles and get to the media and be specific about the communities more than doing ads.
Thanks. Yes, there was a question here. The lady.
Thank you. I'm an attorney and I actually work a lot with intellectual property clearance with productions. And I have a lot of clients that want to make gap funding using something like Kickstarter or Indiegogo or something like that. And I found that your policies about reviewing for intellectual property are not quite as transparent as, say, what YouTube is doing now and paying people back. I know, of course, you say that everything should be cleared that goes on your site, and my filmmakers understand that, but they also haven't seen any consequences of it not being cleared, and they say, oh, my friend used this clip from Warner Brothers to say this actor was in his movie, nothing happened. And I'm trying to say, well, you know, you maybe don't want to give that a try. But is there any more that you can tell us about how you do review the information that goes up on your site?
So we have a large – so the company – so I'm based in Los Angeles, but our company is based in San Francisco. And in San Francisco, we have a very large trust and safety team. And so in terms of the policing of the projects to that effect – They're there to shut down campaigns. They have to receive and anything as you would expect, whether you're on Facebook, whether you're on YouTube, you have to be able to lodge that complaint first and foremost. But once that is received, it is thoroughly investigated, and those campaigns are pulled.
Yes, I just have a question because I want to get a little bit more practical here. Well, obviously, when you crowdfund a film, it's not about pre-sale. I mean, you're crowdfunding a film, but not all the backers will be viewers. It's different when you crowdfund an item, for example, then it can work and you can raise a lot of money through that. So what do you do about that? I mean, is there any... because I know that Indiegogo, I think, launched something that was you took extra fee and then you have the ability to sell something through the platform and you could maybe sell like movie tickets or VOD accesses.
Yeah, so no extra fee.
I heard 4% more.
That's what our normal fee is.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure what we're talking about. So we have something new. It's called In Demand. Your campaign typically will stay open for 30 to 40 days. Once you achieve your goal, you have the ability to go in demand, which allows it to stay open and essentially be a storefront. We also, in January, launched a partnership with Vimeo On Demand. Vimeo has created $1 million match funding. So for films that are raising funds on Indiegogo, they have the ability to receive match funding from Vimeo in exchange for an exclusive window worldwide premiere. So what we're trying to do is facilitate both distribution and then to ticket sales specifically on Super Troopers, which is a sequel, Super Troopers 2. It was a sequel to an American comedy. It raised $4.5 million on Indiegogo last month or so. They partnered with Fandango and they actually sold tickets through the campaign that would go against the actual box office receipts.
So this was done after the distributor or the sales agent got on board, or was the sales or Fandango were there on board since the beginning?
So that particular film was unique, and going back to Dan's point of transparency, so Fox Searchlight released the first film after it acquired it at Sundance in 2001. They did not finance the second film. They did retain the rights. They said to the filmmakers and the talent, we will release it, but it's your responsibility to come up with the budget as well as the P&A costs, which they utilize Indiegogo for, as well as outside equity. To have that partnership with Fandango, it was an agreement between Fandango, Indiegogo, the campaign, and Fox Searchlight. So it was a process, but it actually was not that complicated of a process.
I know Tusco Prod is also doing something about distribution. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, we've been accompanying our filmmakers for 6 years now, and so we are very keen on listening what the feedback is regarding their movies. And what we heard exactly was that, okay, as filmmakers said, I spend a lot of energy and time doing my movie, raising funds, producing it, editing it, and I thought the hard part was done. And actually, that's not the hard part. There's another hard part coming, and that is to show it to a public. And so we tried to think of something at Tusco Pod, saying what we could do at our level with our crowdfunding experience. And so we said, wouldn't it be great if we could rely on the communities the filmmakers have gathered during the campaign to make fans ambassadors and be real promoters of the movie when it's done. So what we're going to do is we have actually started and we are testing it. And the idea is when you do a reward, instead of having a DVD or a poster, you're going to be able to buy some broadcasting rights. Oh, yeah. And so these broadcasting rights, you can define the number, you can define exactly when you want to show your movie, and you're going to give them to the community that supported you. And this community, once the film is done, is going to give these broadcasting rights to their friends and help promoting the movie. So that's the idea. And it's to give more power to the contributors, to the fans, and just not let them be only spectators.
Yes?
Hello. Yeah, I just want to kind of address Kickstarter's feelings on this and what we're doing in this the space of kind of after the campaign and the support that you get and the distribution landscape and all of that. I think we're a bit more agnostic in that I don't think we'll ever be a platform that has a formal partnership with a distributor or tries to push filmmakers in any one direction. You know, we're always advising and kind of leveraging our connections out in the world to support filmmakers and to highlight their films. Probably the biggest architectural change that we've ever had on the site actually launched earlier this year, which is this new feature called Spotlight. And what happens is after your campaign is over, it used to freeze in place. It used to just kind of like whatever was on there at 0 seconds left is up there in perpetuity forever and ever. Amen. Now the second it ends, your Kickstarter, as long as it's successful, kind of transforms into this dashboard. It's a bit like the Facebook timeline. And it becomes updatable. So it's now this place where you can
put a link to PayPal.
Exactly. You can put a link to PayPal. You can put a link to iTunes. You can put a link to your film's Facebook page. And you could kind of continue updating it and building something that I think is very kind of like visually appealing. But to us, this is a way to kind of give the filmmaker freedom to let that page, which really does live on in a big way for a lot of films. It's the first or second Google hit, even once the film is released, kind of continue to have it be an active space to push people to do whatever it might be that they want to do.
And Colin, do you have like, because Slated is all about connecting people within the industry, is there acquisitions happening through the platform or?
Oh, yes. We're also, you know, like Dan said, we're agnostic. So we're in the business of trying to facilitate introductions to sales companies and distributors. It's interesting. You sometimes learn from the community itself because their practices evolve, and you say, "Oh, that was smart. I never even thought about that." And we were noticing a lot of projects were coming on fully funded, which seemed sort of counterintuitive. Why would you join a financing platform if you were fully funded? And so we started asking them around, mostly international films, and they said, "Well, if you're a foreign language film, the problem isn't the funding. We've got that. Is, you know, as Sophie said, it's getting it seen." So the thought was, well, if you're on a network full of people in the industry, you know, then you're going to be higher up the queue, essentially, in terms of what's, you know. So we're using that as a pre-marketing tool to get in front of, you know, so when they're evaluating lots of similar projects, you know, oh, I've heard of your thing. It was, you know, so it's this whole social proof idea that I think we're all trading on, which is, you know, creating momentum behind things. And, you know, so that's how we facilitate sales and distribution. So people are using it to get better terms or be greater awareness in the way that ads do.
Mathieu, when you have a film that is funded through Ulule, whether it's a short film, because you're more specialized in that, do you have any case that this film gets converted into paid viewing? I mean, once the movie is done, especially for shorts, it's very difficult to market that and to broadcast that. So do you have any examples that they straight from the community they had on Ulule, they converted those people in viewers?
Yes, on a film like Noob, feature one, there is a lot of VOD. On TF1 is one of the biggest VOD platform in France. It's a TV, it's a French TV. It's the largest viewers online for Noob after the show, the own TF1 show. So yes, we can pay for the movie. And there is a lot of movie theaters who show this film in France now. And so there is an economic model for the movie.
Okay, thank you. Yes, sir?
Thank you very much. My name is Albert Egbe. I'm a writer-producer. I just want to ask members of the panel, has anyone ever worked with an African producer or African project? I understand and appreciate that most of your work would be with European or American. And if you have worked with any African producer, I'd like to know your experience. And also whether anybody would be interested in an African project, especially one with that is international in content and nature. Thank you.
That also asks the question of how do you get to the platform? I know Kickstarter didn't launch in France yet, for example, so if I'm a French producer, I don't have access to it. So what's happening with Africa?
So we've been available in all African countries since we launched in 2008. Short answer is we're available there. We had filmmakers come through there. It's interesting. You raise an interesting question. So you're talking about how the film has an international reach, and so we're, as a global platform, we see where the strongest campaigns are coming from, both in terms of how much they raise, but also how many from that native country are funding it. Right now, the top five are USA, Canada, UK, Australia, and Germany. At the moment, there's no African country within the top 10. That could be a cultural thing in terms of people funding online projects. But in terms of the films themselves, regardless of their core base in terms of the geographical elements, if they have a story, they have a story to tell that, as you said, is international in base, then they will transcend. I know there was a film called Zero Charisma out of Austin, Texas. It's very niche. It's an indie comedy about Dungeons and Dragons to some degree. And the filmmakers told me they got a $5,000 contribution from Sweden. And Sweden happens to be a big gaming community, a lot of gaming companies out there. So it really just comes down to the project, and you can receive funding from anywhere.
Yes.
So Kickstarter, we are a global platform in the sense that you can, and people do back projects from anywhere in the world, including Antarctica. There's one guy over there who is actually a serial backer of Kickstarter projects. We really want to meet him, but it might be hard to get to him. People can back projects and have from 226 different countries. So we're truly a global platform. We're a bit more measured in where and how we launch for people to be able to create projects. We don't, I think theoretically we could just flip the switch and have it be active everywhere in the world. We like to kind of take our time and do measured launches. For instance, we just launched in Germany last week. We really put a lot of staff resources towards doing that launch in the right way. We sent a large team out there to kind of do a whirlwind tour of Germany and to kind of begin educating the local artists about how to use this platform most effectively. We really kind of tried to build roots within the community, and we queued up 101 projects to launch on day one that raised over 200,000 euros in one day. Localization, translation, these are all things that take time and resources, and we really do put a lot of energy to doing them right. We're actually launching in France in less than 2 weeks, so this is another one that we've been working on for quite a while. We have a roadmap for the entire world, and we do intend to be over and in the entire world within the next 2 years. But we are kind of rolling out in a very measured way. That's not to say that we don't have great projects that appeal to Africa, to Japan, to Asia, to most anywhere. It's very project dependent. Of the three films that we have here at Cannes, one is a documentary called Simbene about the seminal African filmmaker. And this was one where a lot of the money was coming from Africa, as you would expect. They launched via a U.S. bank account, and one of the filmmakers is an American citizen, which is how that project was able to launch.
So there will be the possibility to have a presentation page of the project in multi-language?
You, as the creator, choose the language that you want.
You have to choose one. You cannot
translate. You do have to choose
it.
One. We've seen really good kind of workarounds to that on the site. Yeah. For instance, Alejandro Jodorowsky, the filmmaker, launched a Kickstarter project this year. He's a Chilean filmmaker, but he really has a global reach, and his producers are Japanese, so it was important to them to have the page in Japanese. He lives in France, so we needed some French in there. What they built was this really cool kind of module that essentially led you to different versions of the page in different languages that you can kind of click, and there was a very easy kind of graphic at the top that lets you view it in your preferred
language. But
you get
out of the site.
You get out of the site.
You go to some other platform.
And then they built it so that you can kind of go right back into it to back it. The more simple workaround that we've seen are kind of paragraphs towards the top of the site that say here's the key information for in German, here's the key information in Spanish, and then maybe scroll down for more details.
Can we talk a little bit about, well, as I said before, so it's not about pre-sales, but what kind of rewards are the most appealing to backers? Because, of course, it's about a great story, it's about a great script, it's about actors that are nice and the video that is appealing. But also, crowdfunders, they want to get something in return. So what has been working best when it comes to film? In your experience, I mean. Everybody could talk about this.
Yeah, but I'll quickly. The film itself, people want the film. When you run a campaign for a film and you don't offer the film, people
Yeah, but then you have to offer the film like for $10, $15 maximum. You cannot ask $50 a perk.
You don't ask for $5, $10 but you can ask for a premium. People understand that you're paying for the film, but also you're paying for a premium price because you are helping the movie get made. But in terms of anything else that you would offer up, we always encourage experiences because they should cost you little to nothing. To pay, because you have to pay for these things from your end. If you're manufacturing DVDs, ideally your distributor is paying for them. But if you're manufacturing mugs and T-shirts, that's out of your pocket. So if you can have an experience, set visits, premieres,
even a part in a film.
Yeah. Be an extra. Skype sessions with the filmmakers, because that to me is one of the best parts about crowdfunding is that you're breaking down the walls between the filmmaker and the audience. We had Dario Argento run an Indiegogo end of last year, and he was a filmmaker that he's been making movies for decades, and he has amazing fans. And for him, actually, one of the great perks for him was that he will shoot you on camera getting killed. And for a lot of people, they want that to happen.
And you can be very creative. The guy at Iron Sky, you can be eaten by a dinosaur. So it's more money, you know, because it's a dinosaur.
Regarding rewards, we like to consider at Tuscoprod that, the whole crowdfunding thing is about storytelling. And that if you design rewards, that are really sticking to your movie.
Do you have an example? I just want to have, like, very appeal example.
For example, we had a documentary about that was called The Quest of the Wild Wolf, and it was about tracking a wolf that has disappeared in the part of France. And the guy had just made a reward that was €850, and he made six, and he said, just come and spend the 4 days with the filmmaker tracking this wolf. And we said, okay, are you sure? This is very expensive. But actually, it went away in 2 days. And the people just got in the adventure. And it worked very, very well.
Mathieu, do you have some examples?
There is a lot of examples on the campaign because each project is a different story. So you can always find something interesting and new in your own projects to propose to the crowd. We have the film in Cannes, Nightfare, which is a very man film. So there is a lot of fight and
cascade. Stunts.
Stunts, and a lot of stunts. And you can go to see how the stunts are made on the movie for a few days. So for people who didn't know movies, who didn't work in this industry, it's very interesting to have access to this kind of purpose.
So this is typically something that producers don't think about. I mean, most of the time you say, okay, but what can I offer? I don't have money. It's what I'm asking for. So what can I offer? So this is when someone like campaign manager has to step in and be creative. Maybe you can tell us something about it.
Yeah, I think it should be things, and remember that they're priced at all levels. So what you're giving to somebody who can only give $5 is very different than what you're giving to somebody who can give $10. But they should all be things that invite people, like we're all saying, into the process in real, kind of tangible, beautiful ways that they wouldn't have been able to do if they had just seen that film in a theater. They should also be intrinsically tied to the film itself. One of my favorite recent Kickstarters that just knocked it out of the park with rewards to the point where, like, Gawker was writing articles specifically about how great the rewards were, was a documentary about the American author Joan Didion. This was a documentary being made by her family. Every reward on that campaign was an invitation to Joan Didion's fan base and audience to understand her and her work in a more meaningful way. So that was everything from PDF lists, and remember, if you can have it be digital, have it be digital so you don't break your back with shipping and all of the time that goes into that. Everything from PDF lists of her favorite books that you need to read before you die to recipes, since she throws these amazing dinner parties, these glamorous New York dinner parties. They literally made a digital Joan Didion cookbook. And these are things that are very easy to put together. Other things like write a love letter to Joan Didion about her work, and it will be read to her by her family. All the way up to books from her personal library at higher end, to the highest tiered reward, which was a pair of her iconic sunglasses.
Yes, we'll take question from the audience. There were gentlemen here.
Hi, I'm Yeongol Kim from South Korea. And as a contributor to the crowdfunding in movies, I would like to share my experience with the most recent work by director Im Gwon-taek, who is one of the most famous Korean director who once received the Best Director from Cannes in 2002. But lately, even the famous director like him has difficulty raising funds. So I invested, I sponsored $100 for his most recent movie, which is on the film market this year, Revive. And in Korea, typically they offer a reward like this. One poster, which they mailed me. Two invitations for me and my wife for the screening prior to the box office opening, which we couldn't go because the notice was so short. And the third one is the DVD. So in value, it may total about $50. I sponsored $100, so about 50%. So that's in Korea. I think that's more than fair. And my question is, although we operate on the reward model in Korea, because Korean regulation, financial regulation doesn't allow the equity-based crowdfunding, not yet, I thought that if the movie really make a commercial success, in director Lim's case, it didn't, okay? They opened last month, but it didn't succeed. But in case it is successful, a sponsor like me might naturally expect a more equity-like style reward. So, okay, you made a huge success. So you originally promised one poster, two invitations, and one DVD. But if your movie made a huge success, couldn't there be more?
So bonus, this is something you deal with in Slated. I mean, the people are investing in films. They're also interested in the benefits of the film.
Only. I mean, the people investing are doing so on commercial terms. I mean, I understand your point entirely. But my thought on this is, you know, because surely, you know, I remember thinking before Veronica Mars and Zach's film and so on, wow, I wonder what the problems will be if that film's successful. I wonder what the problems will be if the film bombs and what happens in the most likely scenario when it's neither. And what the sentiment in the marketplace would be, but how are you going to define the success? I mean, how do you know who in that film? You know, I think it's one of the part of the re-education thing is, well, what would that success mean for the film? And there are other people investing in it. It wasn't just you. So I think it's the responsibility of the whole marketplace and all the players to somehow recalibrate all this, because you know otherwise the media gets in front of you and says, look, this is a huge hit. You were left out. And you say, I was. I never even thought of it. I was actually very happy to back that film. You know, I'm proud that I got that made. Well, why am I being told that I deserve something more? And so, you know, I think we have to get in front of this because, the media around us is actually distorting, I think, and making people's, you know,
it's also legal issues. You said in Korea this is the situation, but in many different countries there are different laws, and you can't always do that.
We really believe, and I personally believe, as a backer of so many projects, that we don't back projects based on profit, and we do it out of love, and we do it with a genuine desire, at least on Kickstarter, divorced from the traditional kind of fire under you to make money and succeed, just because we want to see something get made, and we believe that it should get made. You know, that's not to say that equity crowdfunding or equity in general is invalid. It's very valid and will continue to be the way movies get made forever. But this is something different, and this is like where there is an audience and where there is a fan base that cares just because they want that thing to exist, they can now make that happen.
Well, it's good to hear about love and everything, but I managed a lot of campaign, and there's a lot of hate out there, also from the fans themselves. So I would replace love with pride. If you manage to have someone invest in your campaign by making him feel a little bit more important within his own community, you know, like, I was part of this, and... then it works better than just the love itself. I mean, it's like in life. I mean. There was a question here in the front.
Thank you. My name is Valeria Richter. I work for a training organization called Torino Film Lab, where we work with audience design, you know, trying to reach out and find out who your audience is, especially for art house films. I'm kind of wondering, with the headline maximizing the potential of crowdfunding in the production process. We've been talking a lot about the financing. Do you have any examples, or where, you know, from the creative side, that, because that also takes energy and effort, and the filmmaker needs to be in on maybe having some sort of dialogue, or I was wondering if you had any kind of cases there.
Yeah, I would say we've talked about financing far too much. You know, to us it really is. Financing is one aspect of it, and honestly is the reason why people usually come to crowdfunding, is because they have this need that they need to fill financially. I have heard, and
we still have an hour.
Okay. Oh, thank God. Wow, this is a long one. Good thing I have two bottles of water. We really believe that what is impactful in the long term on a project is this kind of more ethereal kind of relationship that you can build with your community and your audience, and have this kind of conversation with them that wasn't possible before, keeping them in the loop and keeping them as a real part of the production process. And we really do hear, I'd say, from like 95% of people, that what they remember 3 years down the road from this experience isn't necessarily that dollar sum. It's that number of people that came on board and that number of people that they were able to then translate into supporters long term for not only the film but for their career. I just had a drink last night with the filmmakers behind a film called Kung Fury, which is also out here in Cannes. This is an amazing success story, a short film that raised $600,000 on Kickstarter, and it is the most insane, amazing, crazy short film. They raised from over 10,000 people, and to hear the director talk about it, he was like, he was emotional in telling us about like this community of people that he found, like that was the game changer for him. He's releasing the film for free online next week on YouTube, partially just as like a thank you to this amazing swell of generosity and support.
But then when you want to promote crowdfunding to a regular old school producer and you show him Kung Fury or show him Iron Sky or Once Upon a Time in Jerusalem, films like that, then he says, this crowdfunding is not for me. This is for the craziness. This is for the geeks. This is for, you know, the gore films or over-the-top movies. Mm-hmm. So in a way, you have to balance those examples also with... Right? So my question is any kind of film suitable for crowdfunding?
I can take it, and I'm sure you guys all have your opinions as well.
Everybody should talk about this, yes.
I think yes and no. I think that we make films because we have a story to tell, and presumably that story, you want to connect it with an audience. That said, I do very often tell people, I don't know that you're going to get what you want out of crowdfunding and out of Kickstarter. It's the difference between having a story that sounds great, that, you know, once the film is made and you have a trailer that you can show and you can say, like, now come see it in the theater, versus a film where there is some kind of niche or some kind of built-in contingent that you can tap into. That doesn't need to be gore or geeks or fanboys. That could be a social issue. That could be a community. That could just be run on the name of a filmmaker with a track record at every level, whether they've gone to Sundance, South by Southwest, or if they're Alejandro Jodorowsky or Abel Ferrara. You know, but what we do, and probably, like I said at the beginning, the majority of my time is really getting people to think very strategically about what their films might be about, who their audiences are in a very specific way, not college kids, but you know, this type of college kid who reads this blog, who goes to, you know, this store every day, and then coming up with strategies for how you can kind of start to bring those people on board.
Do you have an opinion of everyone about that question?
A few years ago, we did some research on films that arrived on Slated looking for equity that already had done campaigns on donation-based. And we were looking at, you know, what the amount of money they were raising, had raised, and what they were still looking to raise, because we knew the budgets of their projects. And it was it was 91% they still needed after the rewards thing. But what the point about that was, of that, the, you know, the 8.85% that had been raised, the majority of that figure was dominated by two films at the time, both of whom were based on existing properties. So that, you know, but this is 2 years ago, I think, and it, so that this whole place is evolving. So I think, you know, it was easy, you know, just like with documentaries, it's probably easier to do equity crowdfunding, I think, than narrative films, because you've got something easier to sell to investors. It's a cause rather than, you know, breaking down a story. But to answer your question about audience data and knowledge, I think the spread of those projects is going to increase. People are going to learn now that the concept has been you know, validated, that different kinds of non-fan based things are going to find their way through it, and then eventually everything will be there, and we'll also be able to track the return on the audience essentially of films that have been, so that you can now then go to the marketplace and say, look, you know, instead of looking for the proof of, I don't know, a lab being involved or something like that, you then say, look, it was on this platform, it motivated these people, it had this number, and you can then trade that into an investor and say, this is now, you know.
But maybe I was not clear enough. I mean, let's say I'm Michael Haneke and I was to crowdfund Amour, okay? So obviously a great film, a lot of appraisal and everything, but how do you sell that to the audience for a crowdfunding campaign?
It's a very fair question. Again, going back to Dario Argento, he's a filmmaker in his mid-70s. I think he freely admits that the last few films have not been as strong. Sandman. Yeah. But it came down to, he was taking a lot of those jobs for hire. And he recognized that, you know, this is, his career was sort of towards the latter part of it. And he knew that he wanted to reach out to his fans and say, you know, basically give me that one more shot. Give me that chance. I know that I'll be able to prove it to you. You've been a fan of mine for decades. I've given you so much joy. I hope that you will give me the joy of completing this one last film. Currently funding on Indiegogo is a film called The Other Side of the Wind. It's Orson Welles's final film that was never completed. It's 45 years in the making. Behind the film are a young producer named Philip Rimshaw, as well as Frank Marshall, who is normally Spielberg's producing partner. He was a line producer on the film originally, and Peter Bogdanovich. They're all supporting the film. And, you know, that was a very interesting conversation at the start, because, as you were saying, you know, it was, for someone like Frank Marshall, who produces Jurassic Park, it was very foreign to him. How does this work? You know, it's like even working outside the studio system, let alone making an independent film, was sort of foreign to him. He hadn't done it in so long. But when you sort of put in the context of who Orson Welles was, what his career has meant, what his name means to filmgoers and cinephiles and film students still, all these years later, it really sort of becomes full circle and you realize, wait a minute, there's a way to message this that will appeal to a broad audience. But as I said, it just says, going back to Argento, it's, you know, give me that shot because I give you so much pleasure. This will give me pleasure. And that is sort of a way you can sort of couch it.
Mathieu?
Right now, I think it's more easy if you have a very specific movie, a very independent one, that you are not really in the industry of cinema. It's easier to make a movie on crowdfunding. But it's going to change with the years. And I think in a few years, the question will be, who is the director? Who is the producer? And did they spend time to build an online community before launching a crowdfunding campaign? Is there already an engagement between the community and the director and the producers or not? And it's going to be the difference, will be the time spending to build this community online and not only the genre of the movie.
So we're talking about a star system, people that have a large community on Twitter, on Facebook. Those are mostly the most successful people.
It's more easier if you have a community online. But it's not only a star system, it's spending time on it. Today, you can have a star coming on a crowdfunding platform. If the engagement with the community is not fair, if he's not spending time to talk with the community, as Spike Lee, you said before, it won't work because people want this engagement, and it is important to spend time on it. And for producers now, they are not talking with the community, they are not talking with the audience, and they have to learn to do that for the years coming, because they are going to have to need this if they want to crowdfund project later.
And we have examples of that. Bjork failed with a crowdfunding campaign, and she was a huge star, and she had a large community, but she was not offering something that was appealing enough.
The deal wasn't fair.
And it was not fair, yeah. Well, life is not fair.
Well, everyone said it. I mean, crowdfunding is all about community. So, I mean, okay, it's going to be easier for, say, a documentary to find an audience because the subject is universal, so you'll be able to reach out very easily these persons who are concerned by the subject. It's going to be more difficult, for example, for a movie, a feature film with fiction, and you have to understand what the story is about. Sometimes it's not so clear. Sometimes the filmmaker is not known. So the person will have to work on specifics. And for example, I'm thinking about a short film that, well, there are youngsters between 18 and 21 years old, and they ask they were asking for 10,000 euros, and they just exploded the goals, and they were at 22,000, and they had nothing, I mean, in the story that would really appeal or that was universal, but they had just so much energy and so much creativity that they just reached out their audience and they created a community around their movie that was not existing before it.
Yes, here. Bruno.
Hello, I'm Bruno Smadja from Cross Video Days. Could you guys explain us what, from your point of view, is the best stage to launch a crowdfunding project? Is it when you got a script? Is it when before the shooting, after the shooting, for the marketing? What do you feel from your experience and the success and not success of projects? Thanks.
On a platform, we welcome films at every stage, may it be development, production, post-production, or promotion. I would say it depends on the nature of the project. Some people just need the money, so the good stage for them might be, I don't know, the production or the development. But I would say for feature films, it can be very interesting, as we know that feature films cost a lot of money, and they come to crowdfunding just for, complement their finance plan. It's interesting to use it as promotion because I think about a movie that's called Discount that was released on the screens in January in France, and they came to fetch 25,000 euros, and that was a budget that was around 4.5 million euros. So really the 25,000, they really not needed that much. But they used it to build, an audience around the movie. And when they released it, the community was there too to speak about it and go in the movies. So that was a good stage for them. But it can depend on every nature of the project.
The project will be very different at every stage of the development of the movie. So if you are making a project on crowdfunding, when you are just writing the project, you just have a script, you won't have videos to show and a lot of, you don't even know the cast of the film, etc. So you won't reach the same goal than if you come at the distribution, well, you already have a movie, you already have actors, etc. You have a lot to show. So you have to understand what you want to do with your campaign, what are the consequences you want to reach, and at each stage you can find something available for your campaign, but you have to really understand what is your need for your project and what is the best for you, what is the best time for you to come.
Just to echo what he just said, he's exactly right. Coming in with a title, no cast, no director, you're just the producer, that's obviously not as valuable of a campaign. But if you have those elements, it doesn't really sort of, it comes down to what your biggest needs are. If it's, pre-production costs, production or post, or even distribution. But the one thing you need to make sure of, and we go back, this is sort of what we said at the very beginning, is the preparation. If you're running a campaign while you're in production on your film, it's kind of hard to, if you can't dedicate the resources, it's going to be very hard to make a sandwich and eat it at the same time. So I recommend that you put down the mayonnaise and just wait until the movie's finished production, and then you can roll into a post-production campaign.
I think also think about, as much as it's when you have the need for the money, also think about it strategically from the audience perspective. Think about what would be the benefit of bringing people on very early on in pre-production and then sharing with them over the course of many years as this film comes together, which there is a real benefit for, and I've seen campaigns do it excellently, versus a campaign strategically planned for 3 months before the festival premiere where you're kind of getting the first buzz and press and engagement in and then transitioning that very quickly into, a distribution deal or whatever your goal might be at the festival versus a distribution campaign where you're literally about to take the film out into theaters across the country, and you're kind of using this as the P&A and the kind of marketing launch of a distribution campaign?
Oh, so many hands, sorry. Yes, there.
Hi, my name is Vanda. I'm a producer from Slovakia, and I wanted to ask you regarding the audience. You're talking about building the audience. Is it possible to specify your target group, and do you give any sort of feedback to the producer regarding who is actually hooked on the campaign and who is following, maybe so he can adjust his audience? Because there may be surprises, you know, that I could maybe I could forget about somebody who finally shows up as a very interested and devoted person, you know?
Definitely.
Thanks.
Yeah, this is really where the large majority of my day goes, which is to having these conversations about outreach. And again, it's less specific to Kickstarter, and it's just more about who is your audience for your niche, unique, independent film in general. And so, you know, I'm kind of like a consultant in like that. I have conversations with people constantly that are, all right, what's your film about? What are kind of the target niche groups within there? And where can you find those people? What are the organizations that they belong to? What are the blogs, message boards, press that they read online that you might be able to have access to? Who are the influencers in that community, even if it's not a celebrity, just somebody who every fan of wrestling knows and can tweet about this? So it's really that work. I always say that I'm not the expert on your subject. You are. I am the expert on kind of like how this works to bring people into Kickstarter. So we always work with you to identify where and who those people are. You also do get metrics throughout your Kickstarter campaign. To answer your second part of the question, you can see where people are coming from. So if you have an article, you know, on IndieWire or in the Hollywood Reporter, you can see exactly how many people came to the site and gave money based on that and what percentage of your overall raise that is. So you can really see what's working, what's not working. Is Twitter the strongest refer, or is direct email? Did that one blog post from the, you know, that kind of one niche in your film really explode? Then you can kind of reassess and kind of refocus on what's most necessary.
But you can also see for every backer what are the projects they have backed in the past. So sometimes it's interesting because you can also reach out to those projects and make some kind of partnerships. So you have your own community, and it seems that both our communities are touching each other somehow. So promote our projects, and we will promote your projects. We will be addressing the same audience and potentially double it.
We actually had two documentaries about Back to the Future on the site at the same time, and they cross-promoted each other's projects, and each raised over $100,000 because that community was just like, sweet, why have one Back to the Future documentary when I can have two?
Anyone else wants to speak about that? No, I mean, okay. Yes, here.
Hello, my name is Clydette de Groot, and I'm a co-director of the de Groot Foundation. And we give, not big, but we give grants to filmmakers and people doing art projects, et cetera, that tend to have some kind of social issue that we like. But here's a question I have, because I've been working with some documentary people, and what they get crowdfunding for one part of the film, but I'm finding that I think they burn their crowds out at some point, and I'm just wondering, what's the over long-term strategy? I don't think it's smart to just keep encouraging them to keep using crowdfunding, because I think after a while people will get tired of
paying. They never get tired of paying. I mean, are you tired of paying for stuff? No.
No, but I wonder if you can burn out a crowd, or if they need to get more strategic as they go along, or do they just keep relying on the same crowd essentially?
Look, if you're running three campaigns for the same film and essentially asking for the same thing, that might be too much. And you know, we hear the question of Kickstarter fatigue. Aren't you guys all just passing around the same $10? What I say to that is, it's a pretty fucking great $10 if it got all those films made. You know, I think that you should do it responsibly, and you should do it in a way where you know when is too much. I don't think there's any burnout in terms of like keeping in contact with that audience and continuing to make them feel like they're a part of your process. To launching like 5 to 6 campaigns, I think there's a way to do it very strategically in a way that honors their commitment and kind of like makes them again feel like they can help with the next stage. We've had many filmmakers on the site. Bill Plimpton, a prominent animator, is now running his third or fourth campaign with us, where, you know, the idea is, follow me throughout every phase of my career. You helped me make my first short film, help me make my first feature now, and building and growing that audience over time. You know, and I talk constantly, and I felt it myself when I ran a campaign. The difference between our hang-ups about charity, about asking for help that we have internally, those knots that we have in our stomach, and then what people actually feel when they donate. I think that there is a bit of a disparity there, and like we're very conscious of that.
So it's trending to give again. I mean, because somehow we lost that over the last few years, but it's coming back.
Hopefully.
Yes, sir, here in the front.
Hi, my name is Tony Cabral. I'm a filmmaker from Chicago, Illinois. And my question is actually very specific for Colin, because I am familiar with Slated. I'm actually a member of Slated. But I know that the platform is different because it is more of, in a sense, a social network between investors and filmmakers and so forth. But what is, especially for Slated, because I know that it kind of skipped right past you on that question, what is the right time and the procedure for loading a film to Slated? Because I kind of got grandfathered in being a crew member on another movie.
Yeah.
But what is that process specifically to Slated? Because it is very, it's a lot more restricted for adding a project to Slated than just building a campaign and throwing through a crowdsourcing campaign.
Thanks for the question. It's evolving, and I'll answer that in two ways. So the old Slated, you had to play really by the rules that the marketplace plays, which is, you know, don't come up with a half-baked project, you know, have all the elements in place and think of yourself as a sales agent would if you're handling your project here. And my feeling always was that, you know, the market, somehow the same people who spent so much energy on crowd donation campaigns, brilliantly done, you know, for 30 days, very intensive activity, then the project would end up on Slated, and somehow the other side of them, they sat back as if they just handed it to a sales agent, you know, and said, well, wait a minute, you worked so hard in your campaign. Now, I'm not saying it's 30 days, because now you've got to, you know, it's a longer-term thing. You're not, in 30 days, you're not going to raise $10 million from people. But, you know, think like your own agent. We're not the agent. We're a marketplace. So, you know, at least use some of the think tricks that you learned from you know, and the engagement and, you know, actively find the people who are going to, you think, you know, identify them, find them, engage with them, think about that, think about the kind of the pacing of that, you know, and where it's going to reach. But, you know, be active. You know, it's, we're helping you, but we're not selling your film, which I think, you know, so people said. So that's the first thing. What we're now evolving to, though, is that projects very early on, in fact, it's, you know, without the packaging elements, because in the end, you know, that we're stuck with the same catch-22 that the marketplace is. That is, you say, well, we're, in a sense, we were just making faster the projects that would have got made anyway, right? So you say, well, that's great, but we're not adding. So, you know, we've got to get films made that would never get made by market rules, because the market rules are getting much more restrictive. We see all that around. You know, I mean, my look, you know, just a macro view, there's more money than ever about to go into film, but they're spending less of it. So we got this catch-22, because if you got the goods, you can get the equity. But what the goods are is rapidly narrowing. We're seeing this in the marketplace here because it's so cast-driven. So we've got to break that cycle. So we're now going earlier into the process and we're finding a way to reevaluate the value of scripts, you know, that before the elements are attached. And you'll see some movement on that in the next few weeks.
You have the microphone. Yeah. It's your turn.
I keep it. I'm Valérie Gann. I'm an independent journalist for mainly Écran Total in France. And I have a question about what happens. Domenico asked the question, but you didn't really answer. What happens if a campaign succeed and after the project is not done? How do you deal with that kind? Do you have examples? Maybe not nominated, but what happens?
I have
the risks. What is the do you how do you share the risk with the contributors?
Well,
this risk.
Yeah. So obviously, whether you're Indiegogo or any of these other platforms, filmmakers are coming to complete the projects and get them made. Similar to Kickstarter's terms of service, you have an obligation to fulfill what you promised to your crowd. If you do not, refunding is something that you are required to do. But again, I go back to sort of what I was saying earlier. You know, there are films that for whatever reason, they receive their funding and they just cannot be completed. If whatever, if the director passes away in a tragic accident, that film is, well, the producers could find another director, yeah. But it really just goes back to your messaging, because again, your reputation is on the line. And if you are as a someone who's contributing to a campaign are dissatisfied with how the process is going, or that you have not heard, you know, I particularly heard from somebody who they hadn't gotten their DVDs yet, and it had been about 4 or 5 months since the movie had been released in theaters. And I directly contacted the producer. I also brought in our trust and safety team. As I mentioned, they're there to ensure quality assurance. And we resolve the matter. So there are systems in place to support you, the contributor, and you as the filmmaker or producer retain a moral obligation to fulfill the film and your perks. And if you cannot, you have to explain to your crowd why.
It's a notion of trust and risk all the time, but this is maybe not what you see first when you go to see that video where they say it's fantastic, this is what we will do, there are holograms everywhere, and then in the end, oh, we don't know how to make holograms, sorry. There were projects like that. I mean, in the end, they raised a lot of money on something that was not feasible. And this is what I was saying in the beginning about pre-production. The research amount of time spent on the pre-production is not the same. So
it's like with Iron Sky, it's a finished film. They ran two Indiegogos. The first one raised $200,000, and it was to help craft their presentation reel, which they utilized in the second campaign.
There is more.
Yeah, there's more.
They use several platforms.
Exactly. Yeah, and they use an equity crowdfunding platform as well. And through it all, Timo, the director, was very transparent. Here's what I'm doing. Here's what I'm achieving. And he had even more success each time he did it.
You want to add something?
Yeah, I was going to share a very similar example, which was a project that we had called Star Trek Exxoner, which is a Star Trek fan film. They raised over $600,000 to begin pre-production and begin the development process of this film, which is utilizing a lot of the cast from the actual Star Trek universe. Had an amazing community built around there. They are basically at a stage now where they didn't make the film, but they built a studio. And, you know, so for a fan who might be saying, oh, I'm impatient, where is kind of my film and my download, the producer of this project actually runs something called the Captain's Blog, where literally every day he's posting a new update. And the most meaningful of those updates is literally him standing on, like, the brig in the actual Star Trek studio that he built to kind of say, the film might not be done, but look what we made happen. Like, look what we made tangible. So I really do think it's about communication and engagement. We have... You know, when you set up your Kickstarter, you select an estimated date of delivery, and that estimated date of delivery very often changes, sometimes for good reasons. Exactly. So if you say digital download in June 2015, but then you get picked up by IFC Films and they say, no, you can't deliver until December 2015, the large majority of your backers, as long as you're keeping them in the loop and telling them why that's a very good thing for this thing that they helped create, will understand.
But you're talking about the delivery of the film, but there are a lot of other deliveries, the rewards. And so I want to insist on that because this is what I was facing in every project I was involved with. Your main priority once you reach your goal is to deliver the rewards. It's not to make the film. First, you have to satisfy the fan because this is very good word of mouth for you. And if you're not, if you're saying, oh, we said we will give you T-shirts, but wait until the film is done because we have other priorities now. So they will start being very angry, and then this word of mouth will become like very, very destructive for the project.
And that starts with you when you determine your rewards. And that's why it's so important to be so strategic. The story that we tell all the time is LeVar Burton, who launched his Reading Rainbow campaign on Kickstarter, which is another one of our kind of banner campaigns. When he came to the site and shared a draft with us, he had said that he was going to have, he had limited the reward to 1,000 lunches with him. And we said, LeVar, you're going to eat a lot of lunch over the next year. And he's like, oh, that's true, actually. Maybe that should be, yeah. Exactly. Well, follow me around and you'll see. It's really about being very strategic and coming up with things that you're considering shipping. You're considering the time, and you're not turning what was a film production into a fulfillment house.
Hi, my name is Katrina Drummond, and I'm an animator from Australia. And I was just wondering if any of you have noticed any distinct differences when dealing with animation projects in contrast to live action with crowdfunding, and do you think there are any different strategies animation projects should take?
So as I mentioned earlier, they take longer to obviously fulfill in terms of the film itself. So obviously being very transparent about that and reminding people, because sometimes, again, they forget, and your hands can only move so fast. But I've always seen the most successful ones have some form of proof of concept, some visual representation. It's great to have some graphic design, as in some images, but if you have the ability to provide some sort of short sizzle reel, or even if just a couple of quick moments. There was a short film called Hullabaloo on Indiegogo last year. They were trying to raise $80,000, and they in their pitch video they had a very sizzle of some scenes from the short, and it was amazing. And they quickly overfunded, and they ended up raising over $400,000, and now we're going to make five of them. But it goes back to that particular pitch video and what the visual representation they had in that video. It went viral. Entertainment Weekly picked it up and it went across all sites. But it goes back to being able to have some visual representation of your work.
Yes, here in the front.
Hi.
Wait for the microphone, please.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Davide D'Alessandro. I'm a Canadian interim financier. And my business partner here and I have a new revenue model for films, films at any stage, films that are made or films that are in development. And we're a startup. We already have clients, but we sometimes run into cash flow problems because we'd like to experiment on things. Do you think that any of your platforms would be a fit for a startup like us, since it's films related?
What is your service?
Revenue. We provide. We have a.
So you gather money, and you want to put that money into some crowdfunding, crowdfunded project.
How should we say this? Okay. So, for example, if you have a film that's already made, we can open other revenue streams for that film that are not haven't previously existed. So if.
Sorry. The revenue model for the film is through a better way of product placement through social media. So in that case, what you mentioned before was that we can provide for movie makers also better analytics in order to track where the traffic comes from and where it goes to. And I think that potentially might be at a later stage of financing than the kickstarting. So... is that something where you could see potentials in some form of...
I think that's very tough to answer.
Sorry, we don't have a pitch worked out for
yes,
questions
maybe,
like
maybe
this.
You can reach out to all of those guys
outside
of this debate. Thanks. There's a question here.
Hi, thanks. My name is Luke Tonga, and I'm working for a new film financing initiative. Just want to say first that what I've learned from business is that there is no love, there is only proofs of love. So
I said hate as well.
And hate, and there are many proof of hate, for sure. Just curious to know regarding the average success of projects on your platforms, and having an idea about what is the average amount of money raised, because you have mentioned big numbers, 600,000 euros or 1 million, but what if, in a way, the truth that newcomers may expect, and what did you find out regarding your database analytics that the average project has reached?
So your answer will define who's going to use your platform.
We define success as being able to receive funds and move forward in your project. So as I said earlier, because we use two funding models, fixed, all or nothing, and flexible, keep what you raise, we see projects that utilize the flexible funding model that perhaps don't reach their goal but are still able to complete their film because they're able to take away money that perhaps they would not have been able to do so if they had only raised 75% of their goal on an all-or-nothing proposition. So that's how we define success, moving forward with your project. In terms of how much they raise, so you're right. Not every project's going to raise $500,000 or 600,000 euros. The average film is, especially for first-timers, we're talking probably around the $15,000 to $25,000 range. It all comes down to what is your film. Documentaries are different than the narrative. Shorts are different than web series. So everything is different, and so we're talking about different sort of gradations in between.
But that cannot be your goal. I mean, if you're only reaching 25,000, you cannot say, this is my goal to achieve. So what do you offer for 25,000 to the audience?
So what do you...
What is the goal? How do you define the goal? When you are asking for 25,000 and then you have a film to make, so what do you offer?
So it goes back to either proof of concepts, or you say that you are going to go out to cast or hire a casting director. So it's very being, as you said, being very clear about what your goals are. If you say, oh, you're going to make a movie for $25,000, you could, you know, Paranormal Activity, or Blair Witch, you could do that.
Because they have to feel that the goal is achieved.
Yes.
I mean, having the goal clearly defined is the key.
And that's also one of the things that we haven't touched upon. As somebody who's contributing to a campaign, it's the same thing when you use eBay or any sort of transactional platform or marketplace platform. You, as a contributor, have to use your own best judgment. So what we've actually done is, again, from a trust and safety perspective, we have what we call our trust passport, where you can see that the email addresses are verified, you can see LinkedIn accounts, you can see who these people are outside of who they say that they are. So it's for you to come in and say, here's the information in front of me. Does this seem realistic? Maybe not so much. So that's where sort of where the quality.
So we just have the time to actually conclude with that and have everybody speak about that specific question. I mean, what is the average amount that you can raise? What is your typical case study?
Yeah, I just want to answer directly the question as well, which was what are the success rates on our site? All of our stats are totally available, updated daily, kickstarter.com/stats. The success rate that we have on the platform is about 40%. The remarkable thing that we see is...
Are you talking about films or talking about...
That's across the entire site. Okay. I believe films is closer to 39%, but it skews very close. The great thing that we see, though, is the all-or-nothing principle that we have results in this feast or famine model. Films either don't gain much traction at all and never, in some cases, never raise a single dollar, or they start to kind of, the boulder begins to roll and they go all the way. We have something that we call the tipping point, which is projects that reach 19% of their goal fully fund 80% of the time. And when you get to 50%, it becomes something like 96%. A lot of my job is therapy, and I'm constantly on the phone with filmmakers that are like, I'm tapped out, I'm halfway there, and I have to say, don't jump off the ledge, keep going. And they always get there. And I would encourage you just to do your research. There have been great third-party studies conducted of the different platforms and what the success rates are for projects reaching their goal. Average on the site, you know, projects, I believe the average is still small. You know, it's like $8,000 to $15,000 projects are where we see the vast majority of people raising. There are obviously outliers. The good thing for us is that our business model is really built on those smaller projects. We aren't kind of like thirsting for the next fix and finding the next huge filmmaker. We're a huge population of people doing small but great things. And to answer the questions that you were bringing up, you know, it really does go back to what we've been talking about this entire time, which is very rarely are you funding your entire film on Kickstarter. You have to be very strategic about what the ask is, what stage you're doing it at, both from a marketing perspective and a financial perspective. I don't know if this is company line necessarily, but I feel a bit uncomfortable about people doing small raises very early on. I'll constantly be referred to clients from agents, managers, people in the industry who are kind of like, your film is struggling, it's flailing, you've been shopping the script around, it's a $3 million budget, why don't you do a $20,000 Kickstarter campaign and that'll get buzz going and kind of get investors on board. Maybe not the best idea. You know, I'll very often tell people, wait until, you know, you can be a bit more sure that this is something that you're eventually going to be able to share with an audience, because there will always be that expectation and there will always be that kind of like public-facing need to see something.
Colin, can you talk about this too?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I'm very grateful for your stats, by the way, because you know I use them a lot. It's fascinating. But the averages actually I found are a little sort of deceptive because actually they because there's so many, it's sort of and yet there are such high. And the same with Slated. We don't track the money coming in. We're not as I explained before. So we're reliant on people reporting back to us. But what we do know is that of the films listed on Slated, I think last year, I think the ones that completed their funding, with or without money, through Slated, the budgets were six, I think it was a total, an aggregate last year was 60 million. 24 to 30 films, somewhere in that range, have raised money directly through Slated, part of their budgets. The amount raised for that are usually single checks of 25,000 upwards. I think somebody's put in a million plus but remember this is a commercial site, so it's closer to the marketplace. Those are the figures. With new metrics, the thing that we do track and we like is that the films, regardless of where they raise their money, the films that complete their funding on Slated, 50% of them, of their introductions were made, were to investors they'd never met before. And that's the thing we're interested in, because that may not lead to that project being financed today, but the next one might. So it's all about the introductions for us. Anyway.
Thank you. Because we have to be very quick, because there's a screening here in 10 minutes. So quickly, can you both answer that question as well, and then we will have to conclude.
We also have our stats online, and the average is between $5,000 and $10,000, but it will really depend on the kind of project you have. And the success rate is 71% in an audiovisual category.
We have a success rate of 80%, and this was not the case 2 years ago or 3 years ago. We jumped up from 65 to 80 this year, and I believe this is really due to coaching, because what is going to be key in the discussion with the filmmaker is setting the goal. And we have strong conversations with them, because they always arrive and they have a need. And they said, I need, 30,000 to do my movie. And we said, okay, you need 30,000, but are you sure you're going to reach your community? And are you able to raise that money? And then we work with different stretch goals and setting the first one very low. Well, not very low, but quite low, so that he's sure to get it, and then to go beyond this first goal. And we have an average raise of 8,000 euros.
Okay, so I want to thank all of the speakers. This was great. Thank you all for staying, asking questions. Thank you for to Le Marché du Film for organizing this. You know, it's a little bit margin of the regular industry, so it's quite bold to do it. Thank you very much. Enjoy the festival.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.